Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of WIM Radio. I'm your host for tonight, Peter, and this is really exciting. Joining me, it's really fitting with the Red Wings starting with so many rookies in the lineup at the beginning of the season. We have two first-time guest panelists, I guess we could call, on the show. So joining us tonight, first of all, is Sarah, a.k.a. Helmeroids. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. And also joining us is Josh. How's it going, Josh?
It's going pretty good. It's a happy Halloween Eve here, so just wrapped up all the trick-or-treaters and ready to go.
Nice. Absolutely. So what was the best costume you saw?
Oh, you know, it's funny. We moved here about a year ago. We get about 250 kids through. It's insanity, but there was... the most popular one today was there was a lot of Paws Patrol.
I think
that's what it's called, right? Yeah. So.
So, before we started recording earlier, we were talking, and I made the connection that so there's 1, 2, 3 of us, and we write the occasional recap of the Red Wings season, and. Each one of us has written one victory recap, and we are the only three who have written a victory recap. So kind of tells you how the season's going so far. So I was looking back, and in the last episode we did, we haven't done one in a while. So obviously we're going to get back to doing it much more regularly. But the last one we did was before the regular season even started. So obviously we're not going to be able to talk about every single thing that happened. But what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the Red Wings' performance so far, kind of as a team, individually, et cetera, and then we'll kind of branch off into some more specific things. So the first thing we're going to talk about is how the team is done based on expectations, because going into the season, I don't think too many pundits had the Red Wings penciled in for almost anywhere close to even a wild card berth. So the expectation was that the team was not going to be good. Obviously, with the loss of Henrik Zetterberg, that was – I mean, huge. As Mike Bremmer had a really great article today on the site. That was a huge blow to the team, which I think everybody knew was going to be bad. I think maybe we kind of underestimated just how bad, even though we thought it was going to be terrible. It's been really hard. So Sarah, I'm gonna go to you first. So obviously the team has not been doing well in the standings, but how have they been doing compared to what you expected going into the season?
That's really tough because it was kind of all summer I was trying to figure out what I was expecting because I just couldn't put my finger on it other than, bad. There was that little piece of hope that was like maybe they'll be like the secret, like underdog, good team, Disney story. But I was pretty sure that wasn't going to be true. And then I knew it wasn't going to be true when Zetterberg left. I can't say it.
I know.
But yeah, so I
almost felt bad saying
it
because I knew how much it's going to hurt you.
I know. I'm like, okay, I'm hanging up. Bye. But
yeah.
I admit I wasn't expecting the Bruins Canadians back to back debacle. That was a little much, a little basement dwelling even for my expectations. I didn't think they would start off with all losses though either. So In some ways, like, as a team, I'd say they definitely were somehow lower than my lowest expectations. And I don't know if that means they were that bad or I'm just an optimist. I think it means they were that bad, though. You know, but I've obviously been thrilled that they've started kind of turning it around. You know, even that loss to the Lightning was like, all right, something's happening here. The guys are starting to gel a little bit. You know, now they had to find somebody else to kind of rally around. And I'm sure we'll talk about Larkin a lot. But I feel like it took him a couple of games to really try and find any way to patch the giant hole that Zetterberg left. And I feel like they're getting there now. So I have higher hopes for the next couple of weeks until they do something awful.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, it probably won't be too much longer. Hopefully not. Hopefully it'll be a while before we have to experience, you know, like you said, that 1-2 gut punch of those back-to-back games. I definitely had flashbacks to last year's. I got to write the recap on the 10-1 Montreal game.
Oh, that
which,
was
yeah, that was terrible. That's easily the worst experience I think I've had since I joined the site. like this is like soul sucking. So Josh, in terms of like the overall team. You know, same question. What do you think about how the team has performed overall compared to the expectations you had coming into the season?
Right, and that, like you kind of started out with there, I think it's one of those seasons where everyone was kind of on the same page coming in that this was not going to be pretty. I think even the most optimistic of us didn't see a wild card berth here that would be above anybody's expectation. So it's not that the expectations were too high or anything coming in. And, you know, but being able to watch most of these games so far, you know, the results weren't there with the losses, but, you know, when they were playing some of these good teams, whether it was the Leafs or whoever else, you saw definitely some promising things, especially when the kids were in the lineup early. I think most people were excited to see that. You know, like you guys were saying, the obvious exceptions were the Habs and Bruins games, which I was fortunate enough to get the Bruins recap on that one. And I think you can kind of, in reading it, you can sense my mood just sort of drop as the game kept going along. And it almost becomes comical towards the end. I think I was scheduled for the Habs one originally too, but that ended up not having to pick up that one, thankfully. So that would have been a tough back-to-back. But with obviously those two exceptions, and I think you can even maybe say something like the Carolina one where the score was close, but the game was not all that close. They've been very promising in keeping up with some of these good teams. They have lapses in the game, and that's kind of what separates this Wings team from good teams, is good teams don't have those lapses, whereas the Wings tend to have at least one in every game. And you think to yourself, if you can cut out that 5 or 10 minute chunk, this would be an entirely different game. Unfortunately, obviously, those are parts of the game necessary for them to get that turned around. But in terms of expectations, you know, I was excited to see as many kids in the lineup at the beginning of the season. Obviously, that was not expected until the injuries came about. It's nice to see a kid like Chalowski just performing so well, and it's continuing. Rasmussen being in the lineup, you know, the results other than I played well last night, haven't quite been there for him, but it's good to see him work through that. And hopefully we see more and more of that as the season goes on. And in saying that, those kids, I would say, are living up to the expectations, and you're seeing some development even in 10 games here.
Hmm. Yeah, Sarah, I'm pretty sure that you and I on Twitter, we figured out what the turning point of last night's game was when Blashill did the pointing thing.
Yeah.
So for people who don't know what I'm talking about, hopefully you follow Sarah on Twitter. If not, and Josh as well, obviously. But you know, hopefully you follow Sarah on Twitter just because she's like the funniest Red Wings Twitter person I can think of. And apparently, if I remember correctly, your feed stopped right in the middle of when he was like doing this really aggressive finger pointing. And the team started playing
freezing.
Better. Yeah.
Yeah, like my NHL TV was trying to protect me from the blowing the lead, but I wasn't having it. I kept coming back, and then it just froze on Blash with that super finger point he does. I mean, it's aggressive. And then it got, like you said, it got more aggressive as soon as I hit go. But it, you know what? It worked. It got them going, and we won the game. So, good job, me.
I was just thinking, man, how many doorbells does he go through? Josh, I wanted to come back to you for a follow-up because we talked about, you know, the team, you know, performance compared to expectations. So what about on the player side? Like, can you give me one person who has exceeded your expectations and one player who's been a disappointment, and again, compared to what you expected, right? You know, some people coming in, you know, we're not really surprised that they're not playing that well, but, you know, maybe you expected this player to be a lot better, and
Okay, let me see. I in terms of exceeding expectations, you know, I had a high bar set, but even then, Larkin is really, really taking on that kind of, not quite, but trying to fill that Zetterberg hole. He's just, you know, you watch him shift to shift, just trying to will this team through some of these games. And, you know, it's hard to, you don't see him with too many bad shifts. And it's something that, you know, he's been working towards, but even with my high expectations for coming in, him coming in, he's been more than I expected for sure. And then on the same side, I would also say Chalowski is an obvious choice there in terms of, you know, I didn't even expect him to be in the lineup, let alone playing as well as he has. He's picking up 20 plus minutes a night and he's looked good doing it. And I don't think anyone can really argue that one. On the flip side, on the who's not living up, there's a lot of culprits there. I know a lot of people like to look at Mantha production wise. I mean, I think they'll come. One I would say is Daly. It's just something about his play here. I mean, I wasn't expecting a ton. I was expecting kind of a middling defenseman, and I'd have to check the underlying numbers, but I just feel like bad things are happening when he's on the ice.
Yeah, he's kind of taking a nosedive. You know, coming in last year, he played, I would say, okay. You know, sometimes he looked really good, sometimes he just looked really terrible. But this year, he definitely seems to have taken a really big step back. He seems a lot slower. He seems out of position all the time, which is really strange for, you know, somebody like him who's been around for a while. So, Sarah, what do you think? Same thing. So, a player who has exceeded your expectations and a player who has gone the other way.
Yeah, I'd say a player that's exceeded my expectations, and it really started last season, was Tyler Bertuzzi. And I think maybe my expectations were unfairly low, but I just kind of thought he'd be like a grinder, you know, just kind of third, fourth line, running people over, being irresponsible and getting penalties. And he's really, I mean, he's still doing it sometimes. He can't help it, but he's really been cutting back, and you can just see him maturing and, you know, making better choices in terms of shoving people, and if he takes a penalty, it's like, it's useful. You know, he's not just kind of blasting into people like he was kind of last season. And, you know, his offense, like his hands are a lot quicker than I thought. And if you noticed, I think, it was on last game, he kind of, for his assist, he kind of kicked the puck like up to, he was on one knee and he kicked the puck up to his stick and he made the pass. And that was kind of overshadowed by the goal. But I was like, that's a really nice little move that I didn't notice the first time. So I've been really pleased with him. And, you know, I want to see him stick around and keep going, especially because last year he was being set up by Zetterberg, you know, silver platter shots in the net. Now he's got to work a little harder for it. And, you know, he's stepping up to it. So it's been really great to see. In terms of not living up to my expectations, you know, I feel like the ones who haven't, I already had really low expectations of them. You know, so, and it's not fair for someone like Mike Green, who's injured, that's not really fair to be like, he was terrible last night. but I'd say, I don't know, maybe even Thomas Vanek. I don't know what it is. And again, it might just be unfair judging, but I feel like he was brought in to really add something, that veteran presence, and it's just not been helpful. I'm not seeing him like having, you know, kids on the wings and supporting them, and, you know, he's just kind of taken up space and not like adding anything. So that's been disappointing to me that he's either been bad or invisible when he's actually playing. I mean, I'm realizing now he's actually played a lot of games. I thought he'd been in like 5 games. I was wrong. He's been in like 12 games. So that just shows I want more from him, considering that he's taking up a spot that I want to see go to a kid.
Now, here's something interesting, because for me, Thomas Vanek was going to be my player that exceeded my expectations, but in a very specific way. Because 5v5, I 100% agree with you. He has not been nearly as good as he was the last time he was in Detroit at even strength. But where he has exceeded my expectations has been on the power play, because this year for the website, I'm writing a weekly power play article, which I'm sure once we get to like week 20 of the season, I'm going to be like, oh, why did I agree? You know, why did I pitch this? But so far it's been fun. And from watching, you know, going back and watching the shifts, you know, several times and, you know, winding and stuff, one of the things I really, really noticed, and if you haven't gotten a chance, you know, you can see it in the article that came out today, you know, today being Wednesday, that he's doing something that we haven't really had on the power play in a long time, where he is playing the net front, but he's not just camping in front of the net. He's not just camping in front like Abdelkader tries to do, where he ends up usually kind of blocking his own teammate's shot more than he helps screen the goalie or deflect the puck, right? But so with Vanek, he's in front of the goalie, and then he pops out to the side, and then he slides behind the net and sets up. Like last night, he set up Rasmussen from behind the net on that bang-bang play. But he's done that a lot, where he slides behind the net, and it's really effective. And on the Athanasiou goal, because this is one that I really broke down, the power play goal against Winnipeg, right? So one-timer from the left side of the goalie. Vanek basically comes back behind the net, then he moves back in front, and as he's moving, he basically moves in front of the goalie just as Athanasiou is shooting it. But not only does he do that, as the puck's going by him, he's already turning so that if the goalie makes the save and it kicks out to the goalie's left, he's right there for the tap-in. And it was one of those things where, like, you kind of have to watch it a few times to really see everything he's doing. So, again, I do not disagree with you at all when we're talking 5-on-5. He has been a big disappointment in that regard. So I guess I could kind of say he's both for me. But my disappointment, I have to say, which hurts me to my core, is Franz Nielsen, because kind of the same thing with Daly. He just looks so much worse this year. I know he's out now with an injury. I mean, the only thing I can hope is that he's had like a nagging injury and they're just going to let him rest and heal, because something is wrong. Something is off. I was hoping maybe he was sick or something, but he did not look like he has in the past.
Not at all. Yeah, you're right.
So I'm not sure what's going on there. Yeah.
My fear on those two, in particular Nielsen and Daly, is you hope it's a nagging injury and not just these two are getting older and it's catching up with them quickly, given the amount of years that Nielsen in particular has left.
Exactly.
Don't remind me about Nielsen's contract. I can't handle it.
Well, I mean, if you want a reminder, just go into our comment section on any given day, and you'll read. I'm poking fun at our commenters. It's fine. Obviously, it is definitely something to be concerned about. But speaking of something that is kind of less of a concern now, Michael Rasmussen. We were kind of wondering what was going to happen with him, because going into the season, like during training camp, we kept hearing, you know, from people like Craig Custance, who usually knows what, I mean, he knows what he's talking about, you know, so there's a reason he was saying this. And he was basically like, yeah, he is a lock. He is definitely going to make this team. And then coming out of the gate, didn't really do anything, didn't really look like he was ready. But as the season's gone on, he's definitely improved. Number one on the power play, he's been really good the last couple games that he's played on the power play. He's looked a lot more comfortable. He's done a lot better there. And the last couple games, he started to look better at 5v5. Obviously, still has a ways to go. Still has a lot to learn. And the team made the decision to keep him around past the 9-game cutoff rather than send him back down to juniors. And so he is going to, this year is going to count as 1 year of his entry-level contract, regardless of what happens the rest of the season. The next cutoff is 40 games. If he plays 40 games, it counts as a year towards arbitration and free agency. So that's another potential cutoff where they might, they could send him down. You know, they can send him to World Juniors, et cetera. So let's see, Sarah. So what have you thought of Michael Rasmussen? What have you seen from him? Do you think that was the right decision? You know, what do you think is going to happen going forward?
Yeah, at first I thought it was the wrong decision, and I'm kind of coming around to it. My kind of sticking point was that, entry-level contract, and I'm trying to play, 4D chess about a Seattle expansion draft and placing pieces that I don't know about. But then I put that on the shelf and just kind of have been watching him, and he's gotten, a little better every game, and I really think now that he's hit 10, he's got his goal. I think that there was, a lot of pressure that he was feeling like, I have to impress, or they're going to get rid of me. But now he's here, or at least, like you said, until 40 games. So I'm hoping/expecting that he's going to really be settling in now and not kind of tensing up at all the pressure. And, because he's really hard to read. He doesn't smile or emote at all. So it's kind of, it's kind of hard to, get a read on him, but it's been great to see him on the power play, and I think that's really helping also. And I, like you said, I want to see that translate now to 5v5, but the more time he gets, the better. If he's going to be here, there's no point in having him sit in the box. Just let him play as much as he can, because I don't think he'll get anything from going back to juniors. I don't want to see him in that Teemu Polkanen space, where he just never is he's just stuck in between leagues and then disappears. And I don't think that's going to be a problem for him. But something I'm wondering that either of you maybe can answer is, do you think that next year he would be in Grand Rapids and they would just immediately, or do you think that he would be still really in the race for the roster spot on the wings permanently?
That's a good question. Josh, what do you think about that?
That is a good point. Moving, and I'll jump back there, but off that one, I think that obviously depends on how things go this year, then, who's on the roster next year. But let's say his production never really gets going. He scores maybe a couple power play goals and ends up with under 10 goals on the season while still getting in 50, 60 games. I could see a scenario playing out where they try him out in Grand Rapids, but the problem being is who's taking his spot other than unforeseen free agents? Who's coming up to knock him off his spot at this point? Maybe a Zadina or someone like that. But I would hope that he progresses to a point where it's not even a question of sending him down. But if he's stunted, I could definitely see this team, given how they move prospects, sending him, much like Hicketts you're seeing here, sending him down and giving others opportunities. Maybe he can, accelerate a bit in the AHL level and kind of gain some confidence there. Just going back to what you guys kind of built off, I think Sarah hit the nail on the head with, I think these first 10 games, I'm sure there was a bunch of nerves from it being his first 10 games. He in the NHL, he's making the jump from juniors to NHL, which without touching the AHL, which is a huge jump. And he knows that the team has to make a decision after 9 games. So he's probably, as they say, gripping the stick a little too tight and trying to make an impression to keep up here. And now that that's locked in and done, and he knows that he's more or less here for the season, barring some exceptions down the road, hopefully that loosens him up a bit and we start to see him come around to even strength. I had a close eye on him, in particular last night's game with doing the recap. I just wanted to make sure I kind of focused on him a bit, and because I've kind of said before that he's been a bit invisible to this point. And in terms of on the power play, you know, his big frame out front, I think he is doing a good job. You saw him on that goal last night move well into position for that Vanek pass and put a good shot on. But as you were saying, Peter, he's I don't notice him much at 5-on-5, good or bad. It's you know, you're hoping that, you know, eventually that picks up, but that, I think that's just part of the jump from going to juniors NHL to be noticeable at 5-on-5 after never having to make that jump as a 19-year-old. That's, you know, that might be asking a lot even for a 9th overall pick. That's my two cents on that. In terms of whether or not they should have kept him up, I think, you know, choosing between the WHL and the NHL, I think the NHL is the only way to go there. What he finished with in the playoffs last year there in the WHL, about 2 or 3 points a game, it was his pace. I don't think with his frame there was anything left to prove down there. You know, I think ideally you would have liked to see him in the AHL, much like Zadina, kind of get his feet wet there at the pro level. And but you know, without that being an option, I think this was really the only way to go and kind of trial by fire. And you know, a few games in the press box here and there, I don't think is a bad thing for him. You know, if he's up there for a few games in a row, I start to think that's a problem. But throwing him up there here and there and kind of observing others isn't the worst thing for his development. I think one of the challenges for him is similar to Manta. I think he's going to get similar knocks where, you know, it's this big guy. Why isn't he using it to kind of dominate the boards? Why, you know, he should be winning every puck battle. He doesn't look like he's skating that hard. I think you're going to hear a lot of the same criticisms that Manta's kind of had to deal with.
Yeah,
I agree with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think anytime you have a big player, you're gonna have that criticism. But you know, going back to Sarah's question, because I think it's really interesting. I think it's really hard to answer right now because a lot is going to depend on what happens the rest of the year. You know, does he kind of continue with what he's doing right now, where he's showing signs of promise, but he's not really having like a breakout moment or anything like that. Then if that continues, then I think that increases the likelihood that something like that could happen next year. The other thing that's impossible to know right now is, number one, you know, who's going to be our draft pick coming in? If we get a really high-end forward and, you know, capable of stepping right in and succeeding, that's obviously going to be, you know, somebody in his way. At the same time, I mean, don't forget Joe Valeno. I think, you know, from watching him in preseason this year, I would not be surprised in the least if he makes a good case to make the NHL next year. I mean, you also have Bergeron, who you know, it might take a little longer, but I mean, he's one who's going to be pushing for a spot sooner rather than later. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of what other forwards are available, either players that are already in their organization or players that are added. And of course, because it's Red Wings, you can never rule out four free agent forwards being signed for next year. So. Sorry. I know. Yeah. I'm mostly joking. I'm mostly joking. I really don't think that would happen, but you never know.
You would hope.
Yeah.
I think a similar case there might be, you know, the fear for Rasmus and Amundsen there is, do we get a kind of another Svechnikov story where I think coming in, everyone maybe expected, you know, Svechnikov would finally kind of establish himself a roster spot. And, he, you know, yeah, there was the injury, but he never really did much in the preseason there to warrant keeping him up. And you're hoping that Rasmussen doesn't kind of follow a similar curve.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. All right, so there's a couple other current things to talk about before we move on to kind of a more philosophical question. But basically, we have Danny DeKeyser coming back. Now we have Vanek out for 2 to 3 weeks, supposedly, because, like, last night we were kind of getting conflicting tweets from the beat writers. They were kind of basically saying the same thing, but with different words that kind of implied different things, which if you follow them, it kind of happens a lot, unfortunately, probably more than it should. But Athens U is currently out. He is probably going to be out at least the next couple games, obviously, hopefully not longer than that. So the question I wrote when I made the mailbag for today was, who's going to get the call up from Grand Rapids? And, you know, we were thinking maybe Christopher N, you know, who looked pretty good in, you know, not great, but, you know, he looked good enough that, you know, maybe give him another chance. You know, there's a couple forwards that, you know, seem to, you know, maybe we should bring them up, but no, that's not what happened. Now, I apologize in advance. I don't know if it's Megan. Do either one of you know how to pronounce his last name? Because I just don't know.
Idea.
I've never. Heard
I don't know. I didn't even know. I didn't even know his. He was a person. So honestly, the
truth, man. I feel like I know most AHL players. I don't remember ever hearing this guy's name.
The only reason I know his name is because when I was looking at the Grand Rapids Griffins lineup, you know, for their games, they put up the lineups on Twitter like the Red Wings do, and I noticed that there was somebody named Megan or Megan or whatever. Again, I don't know how to pronounce it. Centering Zadina, and so I was like, "Huh, interesting." So I know a lot of fans are probably wanted Zadina to come up just to see what he can do at the NHL level. I'm not surprised at all that he's not the one to get the call up. I think he's not going to get called up until later on in the season. I think he's got to, you know, he's going to have to go on a tear in the AHL before they bring him up. Mm. Because again, same thing, you know, you don't want to bring him up before he's ready. I know obviously we have this kind of, I don't even know what to call it. You know, this fear of the term overripen, you know, is it like the idea that, you know, we kind of gone so far that way in the past that, like, if you leave him down there for a year, you're almost kind of like, oh, my God, we're doing it again. But, like, in his case, it seems to make sense. Like, I thought he was going to be dynamite starting the year. I thought he was going to be a lot better in the preseason, and he just wasn't. Like, he's going to be fine. He just wasn't ready yet, and that's okay. But So we have Wade Megan coming up, and apparently there's probably going to be room for one more, I think. So do you guys have an idea? Josh, I'll go to you first. Do you have an idea of if they do call up another person, who you think it'll be?
Sure. I mean, it's, you know, I think if you're kind of saying that, this first call up caught me off guard in terms of I had maybe – 2, 3, 4 names I could think of. This was not one of them. So I think with, like you were saying, with N would maybe be one based on that he held his own in the games he was up for. Depending on what you're looking for, losing Nielsen, Vanek, Athanasiu, you're talking about players that are supposed to be anyway putting up goals. So you're looking more from a scoring threat, which, you know, I don't think N is that type of player. I don't think, as you were saying, I don't think Zadina is ready yet. I'd have to check his stats. I know he got the 2 goals in that first game, but I don't think he's done much since. A couple of points, but nothing to write home about, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't think it's warranted to bring him up yet. I don't think it's justified. There's not a rush there to bring him up, I don't think. One of the names I think is off to a hot start. Holmstrom, if I'm not mistaken, is doing pretty well down there, right? So maybe a player like that you bring up and in and see what he's got. I think Megan there kind of fills your lifetime AHLer role, getting their kind of taste of NHL time here. So I think bringing up, you know, one of the kids, someone under 25, is the more justified move to fill another spot for whatever this is, 4 games, 3 games, whatever it might be.
Yeah, Sarah, what do you think?
I don't know. I've been thinking about this, and, I mean, my fear is that all of a sudden Brian Lashoff is going to show up for no reason, and that's just a fear that I have. That doesn't – it's not logical. but that's what I feel like. I was thinking maybe Dominic Turgeon, maybe. And I kind of had Holmstrom in there too, because he's, you know, never quite met the expectations I had, but I'd like to see what he can do. And he's a center, and it seems like centers are what we're always looking for. Yeah, but I'm not sure. I guess it kind of depends on what Blashill does with the lines and who he decides is going to be a center this week. That makes it really hard for me to predict, because but I was really thinking it was going to be Christopher N. Also, he seemed kind of like the utility player for the year.
Yeah, I'm gonna take a guess, and I'm gonna go with Turner Elson, because I've never heard of him either, and so I mean it seems to be the pattern. I mean, obviously I'm joking. I don't really know. I mean, if you look at their stats, I mean, Pumpel is 6 points in 8 games, 4 goals, 2 assists, which obviously is pretty good. Carter Camper is 6 points as well in 7 games, one goal, five assists. I don't know. I mean, like, I wouldn't be surprised to see Holmstrom up or Turgeon, just because, you know, they've been kind of the people that we've, you know, we thought were coming up in the past. Pretty much the only person I don't think is going to be coming up, like I said, is Zadina right away. I do think it's going to be interesting, because one person I'd really like to see get a chance up with the Red Wings at some point this season is going to be Sariarvi. I'd really like to see him get a good look at the NHL level. Obviously, the problem with that is going to be all the people, you know, all the young defensemen who started off in the NHL and have gotten sent back down. Like, it seems to be a fairly long line at this point. Although,
I feel like Sariarvi's kind of always the bridesmaid. Like, he's right there, but he just can't crack it to get that number one spot.
Yeah, like I think names like Sulak kind of came out of nowhere on him, and where Sariarvi was one of those ones you were thinking about in seasons prior, and then he's been jumped by these kind of other guys that came out of nowhere on him.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason I want him to come up is I just want to see hockey Twitter, like, just have 18 spellings of his name.
I want to hear Mickey Redman say it multiple times.
That is a very good point. That's a very good point. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, you know, definitely that is something that can keep us entertained as the season goes on, because I don't know about you. I don't know about you too, but I remember probably the second half of last season just kind of started to feel like just this march towards death, just like soul crushing, you know, just pulling the soul out of you as a fan, like one game at a time. And there's been times in the first 10 games that have already felt that way. It's like, oh my God, it's starting already. Yeah. But obviously the last few games have been a lot more fun. But one thing that's interesting that I know we talked about on the site near the end of last year, is this idea that as a sports fan, you always want to win. Like everybody wants to win. That's how sports work, right? We want our team to win, but we also know logically that right now, the way the team is set up, we really desperately need a really high-end player. And the best way to do that is through the draft, right? So getting somebody like Jack Hughes, obviously Jack Hughes is right now the consensus number one, but there's, you know, two or three other players that are going to be really dynamite top-end players. And so we know logically that the best thing – like, if we could go into NHL mode and just sim this season, like, that would be fantastic. You know, just let's sim to the end, let's get our draft pick, and then we'll start over next year. Obviously, we can't do that in real life. So it kind of leads to this interesting philosophical question of, like, how do you fan when you know that that's the case? So, Sarah, I'm going to come to you first, because I went to Josh last time. So how do you reconcile these two opposing ideas?
I think I do it pretty easily, because I'm never going to be on Team Tank. I just don't have it in me to encourage, like, loss, and I think part a lot of it is just, I can't believe that someone would train their entire life and sacrifice all their fun and their time and their parents' time and all their money just to be like, yes, we're going to lose on purpose. We're going to play bad for a whole year just so we can get good later. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's just because I wouldn't be able to do that. Even if he said, do your job bad, I'd just like, no, because I worked really hard. So it's just, for me, I you know, I want to see them win, even though, like you said, logically, I do know, like, yes, if we lose, we get someone better. But I just don't want to see any more sad Cronwall interviews, sad Larkin interviews. You know, it's nice to have the people I like be happy in their lives. I mean, that
sure.
it's better than last year because it's not Zetterberg. That really hurt.
Yeah.
This is a little better. But, you know, I want to see them win, and I'm always going to want to see them win, whether it makes sense or not.
I'll tell you, sir, there were times last year where I'd watched the post game and I was ready for you to jump out of, like, the bushes when Helene asked Zetterberg one of the, like, the really annoying questions. Like, I was like, oh, she's there. She's hiding. She's lying in wait. So, Josh, what do you think?
It is kind of an interesting dynamic. I think what I've kind of settled into on this is, like Sarah's saying, I'm never going to embrace a tank while watching it for kind of a combination of reasons. But the first being, you know, this is the team I've been cheering for forever. I'm not used to them being on this end of this, but you know, I want to see them win. I think what's interesting about it and what's changed now is that when they don't, I'm almost instantly over it when the game's over, with kind of like, well, you know, this will be good long term. In the moment, I'm upset they lose, but I don't carry it with me over the course of the evening anymore. It becomes moving on much, much quicker, knowing it's kind of, you know, the writing is a bit on the wall in terms of that they're going to rack up the losses this year. You know, obviously the other part of this being is, I think if you full on embrace the tank and go, yeah, 0-82, or, you know, you love that 7-game losing streak there to start the season. You know, the flip side is being, obviously it's been talked about, is, you know, there's no guarantee with a lottery. You know, you want to be near the bottom to have a chance. But at the same time, if you're that much worse off than everybody else and you're getting outclassed game to game, one player isn't necessarily going to turn that around for you. That you're a lot further away from being competitive than a team that's, you know, in a mix near the bottom. This is versus being clearly at the bottom. So you want to kind of, you know, the youth that are in there, whether it's the Larkins, the Rasmussens, you want them to be developing good winning habits, even while losing during a season like this. So I think that kind of is the bottom line. There is just, you're still pulling for wins and the team to play well, but getting over it quickly when they don't.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to go back to something that Sarah said, cause I think I totally understand like what you said. I understand the mentality there. The difference that I think that there is, like, I don't think the idea is that they would want to lose, you know, like we're going to go out there and we're going to try to lose, or we're going to play bad or on purpose or whatever. But I think that the way that everything's set up, like what I would like to see, and I know you had mentioned this before, so I'm guessing we're on the same page, is if we're going to not be that good this year, and I mean, it kind of seems that way, then I'd rather see, let's really focus on developing the young guys, and, you know, let's get more young players in the lineup. Like, you know, the beginning of the year we had, you know, 3-4 rookie defensemen. I mean, to be honest, like, as much as I want to see them in there, 4 rookie defensemen might be too much. You know, I think probably 3 is like a good number, but put them in the lineup. Yeah, they'll make mistakes. Yeah, it's going to cost us, but they're going to learn. And for me, like, I'm totally okay with that. What I'm not as okay with is losing in a way that's not really going to help us in the future. And I think that's the thing that gets really frustrating, at least for me. You know, I don't want – like, I do want to get a good draft pick, but I don't want it to be at the expense of player development that we currently have, if that makes sense.
And I think that's what you're saying with the – go ahead, Josh.
No, no, go ahead, sir.
I think it was kind of goes back to what you're saying about the slow march to death, I think you called it.
Yeah.
Last season.
Yeah.
I call it constructive losing. You're exactly right. That's what we don't want to see is all the old guys going out there, trying, failing, and then being sad. And that doesn't help the future at all. That just makes everyone sad. Mm. Giving guys a chance to be like, this is your, we're not going to throw you out here, to the wolves to have you just get destroyed every night in the NHL, but we're going to show you what it's all about. And then you'll either see how outclassed you are and go work really, really hard, or we'll all realize that, you're more ready than we thought. And that is helpful. But I don't want to go, and I think you agree, so far as we've seen some other teams in the NHL kind of throw their rookies out there, and they just get demolished instantly. And then they don't let them leave. They just keep them there, and then it just crushes their confidence. There's definitely a balance, and we're not there yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you guys both kind of nailed that. Where it's losing with youth in the lineup, it's seen as a learning experience, and there's development to be had from that. Whereas when all old guys line up or veterans that aren't in a development stage anymore, it's just like watching them suffer, which isn't fun for them or us, right? So.
Yeah, I think we're definitely in agreement on that. All right, so obviously we talked a lot about the Red Wings, but we are going to transition a little bit. We got two things coming up in a minute. We got Positivity Corner, which is always fun, and then we got our reader questions to close the show out. But before that, as much as we love Detroit, there is other hockey going on. There are other teams playing. I know sometimes it doesn't feel that way, but trust me, there are. So what I'm going to do is, and you can take a second to think about it. If you need a second to think about it, I can jump in with one. So what is a storyline that is happening in the NHL that you are interested in following? Like, you're really interested to see how it's going to turn out. So I'll throw it to either of you if you have an idea. Like I said, if not, I can jump in.
There's one that pops out to me, and I think I've seen someone else mention it somewhere in the Twitterverse there. I hope it continues, is seeing personalities in interviews. It's, I think there was the Kuznetsov one where he talked about it's too much work to be an MVP. You have to work 365 days a year, and that doesn't interest him. Doughty had mentioned some things about trying to position himself in contract talks. And, some of the things he was saying was to better position himself. I hope that's not that. I hope we see more of the PK Subban personality types and things like that, because hearing the same slogans from every player, every game, gets tiresome. It's an entertainment business. I'm not sure why this was never really embraced the way maybe it finally is now.
So you're saying you don't want to hear them talking about getting pucks in deep and nothing like that?
So yeah, that's exactly it, right? It's just it's almost shocking to hear them say something interesting, and I just hope this isn't the end of it.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you on that one. Sarah, what do you think?
One story that I haven't been following, but that I really need to, is the LA Kings, and I need to follow them because it's going to make me feel better about the Red Wings, at least for now. I don't know, because I don't pay attention to the Kings because I don't care about them. And I kind of wonder if that's what happened. They realized no one's paid attention to them for 4 or 5 years. So they just imploded completely. And now with, I guess, Jonathan Quick is out for an unspecified amount of long time with a torn meniscus or some kind of knee surgery. But he's not anticipated to come back for quite some time. I need to look into this and figure out what is wrong with them, because if they're worse than us and the Senators, Something is going on. And I also don't want to be worse than the Senators, so that's work to do. But I need to investigate the Kings.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if our listeners are aware of this, but let's see, on June 28th, 2012, the LA Kings team account tweeted a what has come to be a notorious tweet, and it was especially fun for me and a lot of other people to retweet it today with the news. To clarify, now this is when they signed Jonathan Quick. To clarify, that's 10 years after next year, so 11 years in total of our goaltender being better than yours. So the schadenfreude is just flowing through my veins. Yeah, so if you're unaware of that, you're welcome, because it is a fantastic tweet to come back to.
I did not know about that one.
Oh, it's so good. I'm trying to think, because like there's a really obvious one, but I'm trying to think if there's something else I want to talk about. Well, maybe as I'm talking, I'll think of a better one. But I mean, I still am interested in the Nylander situation, just because it's going to be fascinating to see what happens there, because of I really like Kyle Dubas. Obviously, he's not our general manager, so I don't like him as much. But like, I think he's a smart guy. I think he's got a good head on his shoulders and has, you know, some really good ideas. But I really am wondering if his quote, I think it was this summer, is going to come back to haunt him when they asked him, like, you know, are you going to be able to keep Marner, Matthews, and Nylander? He's like, absolutely. Or like, you know, he's like, I guarantee, or whatever he said. Because it's not really looking so good right now. And plus then you have the whole idea of players not taking what they're worth to help out the team. And like most of the time that doesn't really work out. I mean, every now and then it does, but it doesn't really work out a lot of the times. So I think that's going to be really interesting to see what happens with that. Because as we've seen, the Maple Leafs certainly have a very scary power play when they have everybody healthy, but at the same time, it's going to be interesting to see them crash and burn if they end up doing it. It's going to be really fun reading Leafs Twitter after having to be annoyed after the Tavares signing for about a month. So that's going to be really fun. Whatever. I'm going to stick with that. Yeah.
It is funny to kind of see the two sides of it, right? You know, when things are going well, it's oh my God, I can't escape it. And then when things are going poorly for them, you kind of just embrace the terrible headlines everywhere of how the sky is falling. We haven't scored four goals in a game since three games ago. And you know, we can only dream to have problems so good. I mean, the scary part there, the Nylander situation is, I hate to say it, but that team has been so lethal so far, and then you just add one more weapon in the arsenal. It's scary to think what they can do. It's certainly kind of an interesting time to be. I live here in Ontario, so you kind of see it everywhere. Everyone's talking about it. I got lots of friends who are Leafs fans, so. You know, when I see it as a whole across Twitter, it's tough just to see all the Leafs praise and the greatest team ever assembled. But on a individual basis, I have lots of good friends where, you know, this has kind of been a long time coming for them. I have a friend who probably watches 70 plus Leafs games every year and has been doing so even when they were putting out terrible teams. So for guys like him, it's kind of nice, and then just as long as you avoid the Twitterverse when they're doing well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we have one of our favorite segments every episode, Positivity Corner. Right, so this is when we go around and we say something that we are positive about, something that we are happy about, and it could be about the Red Wings. It doesn't have to be. It could be pretty much anything. So Josh, what do you have for us for Positivity Corner?
All right. Positivity Corner, on a hockey related note, let's, I got, Rasmussen's first goal. You know, it's that's great to see, and hopefully he kind of builds off that. And kind of going back to something we start with at the beginning of who's impressing, just more and more of Chalowski here. It's just, you know, the more and more rope he gets, he seems to be doing better and better, and I hope that trend continues. That's been the gem of the season so far, I would say, for sure.
Sure. Sarah, what do you got?
So I'll have a fun fact to start, is that
okay.
I just found out that Rasmussen lives with Larkin, like how Larkin used
okay.
to live with Luke Glendening. So it's like his role mm-hmm. model. Larkin is like the father now. And then a side hockey note is I will be seeing my first Grand Rapids Griffins games, plural, in person in mm-hmm. 2 weeks. And I'm really excited about it.
Oh, that's awesome.
I've never
fantastic.
Been to Grand Rapids,
I
and I've never seen the Griffins. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, same here. I've never done either. So that's awesome. I'm sure you're looking forward to that, and that's I definitely look forward to hearing about it after. Positivity corner. Let's see. Well, on the Red Wings, note, I'm going to say I'm positive that we've won two games in a row. I had forgotten what it was like to score more goals than the other team, and we've done it twice. So I'm starting to remember. So that's pretty cool. And on a non-Red Wings-related note, but on a still hockey-related note, my copy of Sean McAdoo, a.k.a. Down Goes Brown's book came yesterday. I forget off the top of my head what the title is, but it's basically like how great the game of hockey is and how dumb the NHL is. It's a history of the NHL. And Jay and I were lucky enough to get to talk to him on the last episode, or for sure. And he's, you know, number one, super nice guy, but he had a lot of awesome stories to tell us. And I'm really excited to dig into that book. All right. So obviously, as you have realized at this point, an hour into the show, JJ is not with us tonight. He was going to be, but then he realized that that we basically scheduled the episode for Halloween, and he wasn't able to join us because of father duties for Halloween. So we have our reader questions. So I'm going to hopefully do a good job of filling in for JJ as your reader question reader. We don't have a lot tonight, but we definitely have some good ones. Especially we have a nice, at least one nice Halloween themed one. So here, let's dig into it. All right. So this first one's kind of a minefield, but let's see what you want to say. So the first question is from Kay Stengy. Stengy. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing it. Who is your least favorite personality on the FSD crew, and who is your favorite?
I have a favorite. That's an easy one. Mickey is the easy favorite for me on that. I'm assuming that's a fairly common one. I'm gonna
sure.
have to think for a minute on least favorite, though. You can circle back to me on that one.
So what do you?
Yeah,
think?
That's tough. That's tough because it's like my least favorite is kind of also my most favorite. Sorry,
okay.
John Keating. I love you, but it's uncomfortable when he's talking and Ozzy looks like he wants to be anywhere else in the world. You know, the Death Valley, outer space. He wants to be anywhere else, and I think Keats takes a lot of like joy in seeing how uncomfortable he can make Ozzy feel on camera, and that makes
yeah.
me uncomfortable. But I also love it. So it's kind of a mixed love hate thing. Like I wouldn't want to live without it, but I also don't enjoy living with it.
It's so funny you say that because, it's kind of the same thing. It kind of hurts me to say it because like, I don't dislike any of them. Like, it's not like I'm like, oh my God, I hate this person. Like, I can't stand this person. But I do agree with you on John Keating in that, I both love and hate his terrible intros. Like, it's, you know, because you know he sat there for like a half hour and tried out like 15 different versions. And it's always something
right?
like in the news, you know. He's like, Patrick Laine likes to play Fortnite. It's been a fortnight since we played Winnipeg, you know, like, or something like that. And it's like,
you're
on the one
too
hand,
good
it's
at
kind
that.
Of,
why
yeah.
are you so
yeah.
good at that?
Like, on the one hand, like, it's funny, but not in a funny way. Like, it's funny in, like, a, oh, my God, I can't believe he just said that way. No, I'm going to throw out a reference here, and I don't know how many people are going to get it. If you don't get it, you can look it up on YouTube. So this is like a WNYW, which is like a New York, like a local, I think it's like a local Fox News, like not Fox News, the national one, but like a Fox affiliate in New York. And there's an anchor. I don't know if he's still there, but his name was Ernie Anastas. And in the middle of a segment, he basically said, and I know we can swear on this, I'm so used to not doing it. He basically said, "Keep effing that chicken." And everybody looked at him, and you see this, like, shit-eating grin on his face. And, like, that reminds you, like, the way John Keating looked, like you said, when he knows he's making Chris Dodd get uncomfortable. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, just Google it. It will come up immediately. And Josh, I definitely agree. I mean, Mickey Redmond's fantastic, but for me, my favorite is Ken Daniels. And again, that doesn't mean I don't like Mickey, but I really appreciate Ken Daniels, especially when we hear some of these other, you know, play-by-play guys. You know, just appreciating his professionalism. Although the other day we did get to see him without a shirt at the beach. So, but
yes.
You know, when he's on the mic. Doing the play call, he is definitely a professional. He's awesome, and I really appreciate his skill at it, because it's not easy to do well. The next one is not a question, but thank you, Shotgun Farmer, for your comment. Again, not being a jerk, it's just not a question. So okay, so this is from A Smith 55. What to watch for? I live out of state. I usually have to order the NHL team package on a streaming service in order to get coverage. Is it worth it this year? Or should I just take this season to catch up on Westworld? What do we think?
Well,
you know,
I live out of state, I think, and so does Josh. Peter,
yes,
you live
right.
out of
mm-hmm.
state? Do you live out of state?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I have NHL TV, and I pay for it every year, and I will continue to pay for it no matter how bad things get. So that's my vote. Watch it to the bitter end or the surprising win every once in a while.
Towards the end of the death march.
I very much agree with that. Yeah, I order the package every year. And I guess my question being is, did he order it last year? Because if you made it through last year, there's at least kids in the lineup this year to kind of watch for. And whatnot. There's more to watch for this year than maybe there was last year outside of Zetterberg. Sorry, that would be the one exception.
Yeah. Well, and plus, at the same time, like, you know,
if you get me.
Yeah.
I'm still watching without Zetterberg. There's no excuse for anyone.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, like, you know, as, you know, get the NHL TV package and then follow Sarah's tweets, and you'll get to see sparkles and hearts and unicorns, and it'll make, like, even if the team's not doing well, it'll make you happy. It'll make you happy. It'll make you laugh. But yeah, I mean, it's a little weird, 'cause, like, I kind of have to have it, because, you know, just like all of us, I mean, not so much this year as last year, but, you know, I write recaps, just like you guys do. And, you know, like, I want to go back and do GIFs and, you know, clip things for articles and stuff. So I kind of need to have it. But yeah, I mean, same thing, you know, 'cause it's, you know, you can watch other teams too. You know, if for some reason you're just like, oh man, I can't watch the Red Wings right now, I need to take a break. Well, then there's other teams you can watch, you know, and then come back to it once you kind of, I don't know, gotten over it. All right, so next question is from R. Sizzle, because it's an exclamation point, so I always want to say it that way, so I'm going to. All right, so I'm trying to figure out, because, like, this is funny the way it's written, and I don't know if I can convey it orally, but I'm going to try. When DeKeyser comes back, who comes out of the lineup? With Vanek out for 2 to 3 weeks and Athanasiou possibly out more than a couple games, who gets the call-up from Grand Rapids? Nope, scratch all that. Tell us why Wade Megan is going to be player of the game.
I guess going back to maybe the original part on the De Keyser one, who comes out of the lineup on the defensive end, I think the realistic answer is you look at someone like a Jensen, but it'd be kind of I would expect some sort of rotation where maybe Cronwall takes a game, Erickson with some sort of long ailment. But what I would, like I was saying before, I would maybe like to see is Daly take a seat for a bit and see if that kind of resets him. On the other non-scratched out end of that question, how does Negan get player of the game or why? Oh, because it'll drive everyone nuts when the guy no one's heard of comes in and explodes for a 2 or 3 goal game and then stays up while everyone else, all the other kids have to stay down because of the hard work and time he's put in the AHL.
I mean, who knows? Maybe he can also play defense. That
replace
in the lineup.
Kelsey.
Yeah. So, Sarah, do you have an answer for why he's going to be player of the game?
Well, he's left-handed, so he's already off to
there
a great
go.
Start.
He's over
6 feet tall. He's
okay.
Over the age of 25, but he is under 200 pounds, and I think that's really grit value. Maybe too low to be player of the game, and he's not from Michigan. He's from New York.
Uh-oh.
So is Jimmy Howard. So...
Oh, okay.
So he's like upstate New York, which is practically Toronto. So he's basically a Maple Leaf, and the Maple Leafs are really good. So that is why Wade Megan is going to be a player of the game.
There you go. Ipso facto. That's the truth. All right, moving on. ENSRW asks, what is your favorite Halloween treat to pass out?
Let's see. Today... a big hit for us was Play-Doh. The little ones go nuts for it. They you put that in their bag and they just run screaming back to their parents, so excited that they get Play-Doh. So I think that's a winner.
Interesting.
I've never heard that.
Huh.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, there's at the store they got these little containers now. They're like little mini-sized Play-Doh containers, and the kids go nuts for it.
Well, I'm really sad because I've never had trick-or-treaters ever because I grew up in the middle of the woods and now I live in an apartment that doesn't have trick-or-treaters. So I don't have anyone at work who like comes trick-or-treating to my office, although I went trick-or-treating to someone else's office and tried those hot Skittles. They're actually pretty good. So that'll be this year's Halloween treat for me.
I'm guessing the hot means like spicy.
Yeah, that's like the new thing. There's all these candies now that are trying to be like Red Hots. So they're like cinnamon now.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha.
For a second, I was like, I'm guessing it's not temperature. that was weird.
That would be a little stranger.
It's like, well, you take your Skittles, you heat a saucepan up to medium heat. And I'm kind of in the same boat. We used to live in an apartment complex where we had a decent amount of trick-or-treaters, and now we live in a house, and it's not like we're in the middle of nowhere, but we're not like really in the path of like a lot of people walking by, I guess. So last year we bought like 3 bags of candy and we were all ready, and then like nobody came. And so this year we bought 1 bag of candy and I'm pretty sure nobody came. So I get a bag of candy. Yay. It's funny because, like, this question reminds me of, every year, like this is not my idea, but I saw it today on Twitter, where every year they have, like, a news article about, like, oh, my God, somebody's going to give your kid candy filled with drugs. And, like, somebody's like, if somebody has drugs, they're not going to pass them out to kids. They're going to use them. It's like, why? Like, man, I got all this marijuana. You know, should I smoke it? No, I'm just going to give it out to kids. Like, I mean, it makes sense. Okay, I just had to share that because that just made me laugh today. You guys know how it is, like the way the world is, like we really need to laugh about, I don't know, once every 5 minutes to stay sane. So we're getting near the end. We have from our community moderator, Rarpar, we have How long until the Hicketts Mafia makes enough backroom deals to get him called back up to Detroit?
Well, I have safety of myself and my loved ones not to speak on the Joe Hicketts Mafia and all my theories about it, because I am not immune from Joe Hicketts. He could be anywhere. He's so small.
Yeah.
He could be in your backpack right now, and you wouldn't even know. So, but yeah. I think he'll be back, because people get hurt, whether mafia related or natural causes. Old guys get hurt. I think we'll see him some more this season.
Yeah. Trevor Daly fell on the Stairmaster.
I think Sarah's the expert there on the Hicketts Mafia. In speaking on Hicketts himself, yeah, I think, you know, it's just a matter of when, not if, we see Hicketts coming back up. And you know, there's always a soft spot for the small undrafted kid who's kind of worked his way in, and you know, that's a story you want to see that kid succeed for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as you were talking about this, like, I started picturing, like, I was trying to like picture what the Hicketts Mafia look like, and I started mentally picturing the Oompa Loompas, and I was like, no, I don't think that's right. And so now I think that the Hicketts Mafia is basically like a series of like CGI characters all played by Andy Serkis. So I think that's the Hicketts Mafia, and like you said, you never know where they're going to be. It's like Gollum, they could sneak up behind you, right? You never know. But in all seriousness, I agree. I think we're going to see him back up. I think last year he definitely deserved to be up longer. This year, it's not that he played bad. I just don't think he stood out as much as he needed to. You know, like we were talking about before, like, I mean, Chlovsky basically made it impossible to send him down. And Hicketts didn't do that. And I still think Hicketts can definitely be a good NHL defenseman. But didn't really show what he needed to show so far, but I think he definitely has potential to come back up and to do well. So we have two more questions left. The second to last one is from Al the Octopus, and can you pass up this discount? The Stephen Weiss jersey is now only $6.99. That's $6.99 on NHLShop.com. That's 75% off. Tempted yet? I'm waiting for it. But wait, there's more. All right, follow up. Will NHLShop.com successfully move this inventory before the buyout cap hit ends? I think the answer to the second question is no. So are either of you thinking about buying a Stephen Weiss jersey for $6.99 from NHLShop.com?
Someone's follow-up comment was saying I had to make sure you're joking. I thought the same thing. If that was at all real, I was going and purchasing one right now.
Yeah,
that is a must-have for the collection.
Oh man,
I don't know, guys. I'm still holding out for the Valtteri Filppula Winter Classic jersey for the Winter Classic he didn't play in. With the red one.
There you go.
I'm holding out for that to knock down to under $10. I think we're almost there.
I'm fairly certain if you go back far enough in my timeline, there's a tweet somewhere in there bragging about a Stephen Weiss overtime goal, and I maybe should go back and look at deleting that if how ironic it looks now. But I will get the T-shirt to vouch for it.
Oh yeah, like earlier this summer, I went back and I looked at like my tweets from the like my very first tweets, and they were so embarrassing. Oh my god, I was like, what was I thinking? And it was weird because I had the same thought when I looked at the tweets that I had last night. But okay, so to close out, we have our fellow writer Mike Bremmer. Has a good list question, right? These are always the heart and soul of the mailbag questions. All right, so here we go. I was at a Halloween party with the Wings the other night, bragging, but they were in costume. Can you help me identify them? There was. All right, so here's the list. Right, so we can kind of go around and jump in and see, like, you know, what we think is the best person for each one. All right, Frankenstein, an evil brain surgeon, a sexy devil, the Invisible Man, and, of course, Gritty. And obviously he says, did I miss anyone? I mean, I think it's pretty obvious who Gritty is, right?
Yeah,
are we all thinking Wachowski, or is there somebody else?
Yeah.
You may be thinking Wachowski, but I have an alternate theory, obviously.
Okay.
It's me. So I think this is actually an invention of Nyquist. I think that he and Larkin constructed the costume around Michael Rasmussen while he was sleeping. So Ras woke up as Gritty, and he just went with it. He didn't know what to think, but he just said, okay, this is who I am today. And he's been Gritty for, like, he's going to be Gritty for the next week. That's my theory. Nyquist
is tricky. I just realized I don't follow. How do I not follow Gritty? I had to look because I remember he had a really good tweet today where I think Kim Kardashian tweeted, like, something about she's going to have more bikini pics. And he's like, ooh, awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, Gritty. Gritty. Okay. So, sorry. So continuing on. Do we have, all right, so which ones can we identify here?
Oh, is Mantha a Frankenstein? There's something about that frame. And if Rasmussen is secretly Gritty, it's gotta be someone like Mantha for Frankenstein, right?
Well,
I'm
going to go a different way on here. I'm going to go a different way on here because it says Frankenstein and not Frankenstein's creature. So I'm going to go with Blashill, right? Because he tries to create something and it ends up blowing up in his face. So I'm going to go with Blashill for Dr. Frankenstein.
That makes perfect sense. And it's related to that bald spot above his ear. That's driving me crazy.
Exactly.
There's something up with that. Since you mentioned it. I think you were the first one to point it out, and all I can do is see it now.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
This goes back to your Gritty theory. This lines up. Is Nyquist the sexy devil? He's kind of got that look.
He's got that
mischievous
look. He just always looks like he's up to something. Like, I don't even know if he's the sexy devil, but he's definitely the one on your shoulder that's like, yes.
Yeah.
You should dress up as Gritty just every day for your job interview. You should go to your job interview as Gritty in a suit. And you would do it because it's really convincing.
Yeah. An evil brain surgeon.
Jimmy Howard. No question.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Yeah,
those eyes behind a medical mask, that's the last thing you see. Terrifying.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
I mean, like, on the same note, like, can we add Chris Osgood in there as an alternate for the same reason?
Yes. He's like the other end. Jimmy is the, like, I might bite your nose off, but Ozzy just looks into your soul. Like, he's gonna take it through the TV.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, Jimmy's the guy in those serial killer Halloween movies where you're like, it's obviously Jimmy, and then it's not at the end because it's the easy choice.
We're missing the Invisible Man.
I'm going to say Vanek.
Going back to the earlier theories on that.
Yeah, I'm going to say Vanek. Again, as long as this party isn't happening during the power play, I think Vanek is the Invisible Man.
Fair.
Well, we all know what I'm going to say. Nick Jensen, because I always forget that he exists. And I want to remember. But he's invisible. But he's doing good stuff, invisible, while he's doing it. So he's a good Invisible Man. He's one of the good guys.
Yeah. Or, I mean, now we can kind of add Jacob De La Rose. Like, did you remember he's on the team? Because I didn't.
Yeah, where did he?
I was like, wait, is Roulette back? I was like, is Roulette back? What's going on here? Oh, yeah. I even wrote the article about it. I totally forgot about him.
It's funny they slotted him in there. Like what they say was like on this chart, it showed like the second line, and yet I don't recall seeing him almost at all throughout that game.
All right.
But
so
now we'll be here forever.
That. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh yeah. He's kind of wormed his way in. He's not going anywhere. Speaking of spooky thoughts on a Halloween night. All right. So that is the end of the mailbag, and that brings us to the end of our show. So before we close it out, any last hockey related thoughts, Red Wings related thoughts from either of you?
I just want to win. I want to win tomorrow against the Devils. It should be their worst day because, like, they used all their energy on Halloween being evil. So
yep.
Let's get win number three. Let's get three wins in a row. Just even if it never happens again this season, I want it now. I want my three wins in a row. I'm ready.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
sorry.
Just let's keep rolling the kind of positive play along here, like, and leave those Bruins and Hab games in the rearview mirror a long ways away. Losing's fine, but let's keep those one-sided affairs that are over in the first period a long ways away. So let's see. But yeah, I agree. Let's make it three, and we won't get cocky and go for four or five. Let's start with three.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. It's like, you know, four is right out. my last hockey related thought is I just thought of a great Halloween costume that I could have done, and it could have been a Taylor Hall jersey, and I could have gone as the Devil, you know, because he's the only player you know on the team. So
are you sure you're not John Keaton?
All right, so for Sarah and Josh, this is Peter, and thank you so much for listening, and we will see you again really soon. Winging it. Winging it. Winging it.